from the Swiss Alps to the Canadian Rockies, celebrating unique connections between Switzerland and Canada. Brought to you by the Swiss representations in Canada.
Imagine awakening on a distant planet where temperatures soar to hundreds of degrees and the landscapes defy earthly comparison. Such a scenario most likely places you on an exoplanet, a planet outside of our solar system. Astronomers have identified thousands of exoplanets, some of which may be habitable or even resemble Earth. The study of these distant worlds is an international endeavor, with contributions from nations like Switzerland and Canada. In 2019, Swiss scientists Michel Mayor and Didier Queloz were awarded the Nobel Prize in Physics for their work in furthering our understanding of the universe and the discovery of an exoplanet orbiting a solar-type star. And it doesn't stop there. In 2020, Michel Kunimoto, a PhD candidate at the University of British Columbia, discovered evidence of 17 new exoplanets, including a roughly Earth-sized world in the so-called habitable zone. These achievements, however, occur against a backdrop of ongoing challenges regarding gender representation in STEM fields, particularly in disciplines like astrophysics. Gender ratios within these fields remain dishearteningly low, typically ranging from 10 to 15%. This persistent disparity underscores a broader historical pattern wherein the remarkable contributions of women are often overshadowed or undervalued. My name is Isabelle Despicht, academic intern at the Embassy of Switzerland to Canada, and I'm happy to welcome you to today's podcast to discuss how we can break down barriers for women in STEM. Today, we are joined by Dr. Maria Oroshenko, a postdoctoral researcher specializing in exoplanets. Welcome, Maria.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm so excited to be here.
Maria Oroshenko is one of Switzerland's experts in exoplanets research. She completed her bachelor and master degree in physics at the ETH and obtained her PhD in astrophysics from the University of Bern. After completing her PhD, she returned to the ETH, where she currently holds the position of postdoctoral researcher. Dr. Oroshenko, it's great having you with us today. Could you tell us a bit about yourself and also share the initial spark that ignited your passion for these subjects, as well as perhaps delve into some of the fascinating aspects of your research?
Yes, sure. Thank you for the invitation again. I guess the words that describe me best as a researcher would be open-mindedness and curiosity. When I was a child, I wanted to know and understand everything around me. So my parents were always telling me that I should become a physicist. So for me, I always knew that this is the path that I would take. And as a researcher, at some point, you have to choose a specialization. And to be honest, there are so many fields in astrophysics that I could have chosen because I'm just so deeply fascinated by the universe. But I have chosen exoplanets because this is a very young and rapidly developing and very exciting field. The ultimate goal of exoplanetary research is to understand whether life could evolve on one of those distant planets. And we believe that in order to be able to detect it, we are looking for very small, tiny signals of something that appears odd, you know, some kind of signal that couldn't be produced by physical or chemical or geological processes on the planet. And in order to be able to detect those signals, we need to understand the background processes very, very well. And this is why a lot of community effort in exoplanetary research is dedicated to modeling different types of exoplanets, different environments. Also, my research nowadays is about understanding the interactions between interiors and the atmospheres of exoplanets, because we know that on Earth, the atmosphere on Earth is influenced by the different processes in the interior or at the surface of the planet. And we think that this can also be the case for exoplanets. So we're trying to understand this interactions between the interiors of the planets and the atmospheres of the planets, because from the observations, we only have the data as mass and radius to understand the interior composition, but there is still a lot of degeneracy with regard to possible detailed composition of the interior. So if we combine this with atmospheric observations, which gives us chemical composition of the atmospheres, we can try to understand better this interaction. And this is very important because, in particular, for example, when we understand the water content on the planet, it can help us understand whether the condition on this planet can be habitable, which means if they're friendly for life to evolve on this planet. So this is very exciting.
Speaking of planetary exploration, I'm curious to hear about the collaboration between Switzerland and Canada in the discovery of exoplanets, particularly through initiatives like the Near Infrared Planet Searcher. How does this collaboration intersect with your research?
So, as you mentioned, the NIRPS is the Near Infrared Planet Searcher, and this is an instrument that is placed on the ESO telescope at the La Silla Observatory in Chile. It started its operation in 2022, and it was indeed built in a collaboration between the University of Geneva and the University of Montreal. And the goal of this instrument is to look for a small rocky planet orbiting around cool stars. And this is exciting and important because the temperate, cool, rocky planets are the ones that are most likely to be habitable, at least for life as we know it. But those planets are very small, so they're really difficult to detect. And that's why the person who is working on modeling these rocky planets, I'm happy that scientists are building new instruments and improving instruments to be able to detect those worlds. Because as I mentioned, we are looking for signals that are very small. So the better instruments we have, the higher are the chances that we are able to detect those very small signals that will hint us that maybe life activity is present on this planet. And also, I think generally, you know, nowadays we have one example of a habitable planet, but of course, as we discover more and more of those new worlds, our understanding of habitability and life can also evolve. So I think it's exciting to have more and more examples of the exoplanetary world. That's why I think such instruments are really important and help us to advance our research field.
Shifting focus, I'm curious to hear about your experience as a woman in physics and astrophysics within Switzerland's academic landscape. Given the historical male dominance in these fields, have you faced specific challenges? And if so, how have you tackled them?
Well, you're correct to say that the past decade of my life, I have spent mostly in environments where I was one of the few or even the only girl in a team or in a group of researchers. But so far, my experience was actually rather positive. For example, during my PhD time, I was, at the beginning of my PhD time, I was the only female researcher in a team of 8 students. And I must say, I absolutely loved it. It was a great experience. I do remember maybe a few situations where one of my colleagues was maybe not so nice to me, but then the others were always supporting and protecting me. So altogether, I have very positive memory of the time. So I hope maybe my story today is also an inspiration and would shed some hope that being a young woman in a scientific environment is not necessarily a sad story. It can also be a great experience as well. And my team at ETH nowadays is quite different. We are 5 female researchers in a team of 6 people, so very different. And also, if I walk around the corridor here at the Institute, I see a lot of female researchers as well. But I have heard from some of the colleagues that just a few years ago, that would be completely different situation here at the Physics Institute at ETH. And of course, we are here today to discuss gender balance in astrophysics, because unfortunately, this is still very common situation. And even though I do not remember any serious accident that would affect me personally or something that would completely like hit me off the balance, but I do have friends and colleagues that had some unpleasant or even traumatic experiences related to this problem. So I'm well aware that not everybody is so lucky to have only nice people in the team. And I find this very unfortunate because often, especially young women, can be very strongly affected by this unpleasant situation to the point when they start to actually doubt themselves and think like, maybe he's right, maybe I do not really belong here, maybe I'm not so good or so smart as my male colleagues. And unfortunately, in extreme cases, this can even lead to the situation when they would just prefer to quit because they're not sure if they can really tolerate this unfair treatment for a longer time. This is extremely unfortunate because many brilliant young women actually just choose to leave the scientific or technological domains just because they are not treated nicely. And I think this is a big loss for science and for technology domain. We should make some efforts to support these women to allow them to make right choices for their careers.
Transitioning from this discussion, what initiatives do you believe are necessary to enhance female representation in STEM fields, both within Switzerland and on a global scale?
Well, first of all, I believe it's important to address this in the educational system very early on, because I think that our ideas, our beliefs, our worldview is mostly formed when we're still very young. So if the negative stereotypes are there, it's very hard to break them later in life when you're an adult person already. And at the same time, I think also positive beliefs can act as a sort of core and give you strengths even when people not treating you nicely later in the life. And for example, you know, I grew up knowing that I will be a researcher, and I never asked myself whether a girl can be a physicist, because my parents told me that I can. And I think this is something very powerful. If you instill those positive beliefs in the mind of a child, I think it will be much harder for people later in life to somehow ruin this positive belief in himself or herself. General education is a topic that is very close to my heart, and I spend a lot of time during my life participating in different educational and outreach activities. For example, I was participating in the ESA Lab Igluna, which is an educational activity from ESA for university students, as well as ESA Educational Initiative Concept, which is for high school students. And as well, during my time at the Swiss Space Center, I had the opportunity to participate in the Tech Days, where we went to the high school children and we were doing presentation about space exploration and also careers in space domain. And I think that a young woman giving a talk about your research project or your career in space domain is something very inspirational for the girls, that they know that a woman can be successful in this domain. So I think this is great. I always enjoy this.
Looking forward, what role do professional networks and organizations play in advancing the visibility and representation of women in STEM fields? And are there any particular networks or initiatives that you find particularly impactful?
Well, first of all, I believe that this kind of professional networks are important. First of all, because they provide platforms or events where women from different domains can meet and, first of all, exchange their stories and hopefully also get inspired from each other's stories. And as you notice, I generally have a strong belief of positive examples. And on the other hand, unfortunately, it's often difficult to deal with all this not so pleasant situation like directly at work. So once a woman is placed in a situation like this, she was most likely try to search for help and support rather outside of her current work environment. So it's also important that these kind of events bringing together women from different domains actually provide this kind of safe environment where they can openly discuss their problems and hopefully also find support from each other as well. So I think this is very important. And I do know some of these networks in Switzerland. For example, I was recently meeting some of the representatives of the initiative called 500 Women Researchers. This is an international initiative supporting the promotion of inclusive science, and their network has representatives in many big cities all over the world. Next week, I'm going to an event from an initiative called Elevate Tech, which is a Swiss initiative to support women in the technology domain. So they will have an event dedicated to celebrating women in leadership positions. And they will have different guest speakers, including one of my colleagues here at ETH. So this is also very exciting. Looking forward to it. And I think many universities actually have local initiatives also to support and to promote careers of female scientists. For example, ETH Zurich is also part of the Planet S, which is a consortium of teams all around Switzerland working on exoplanet science. And gender balance is also one of the important topics that is addressed within this initiative. So the members of Planet S can have advice, but also financial support, for example, to attend workshops dedicated to career development and gender balance workshops as well.
It's great to hear about all these initiatives that aim to empower young women and girls to participate in exoplanet research. How do you foresee the field evolving in the coming years, and what potential opportunities do you believe will emerge for aspiring scientists, particularly women?
Well, with the development of the technology, I think nowadays we're always closer and closer to being actually able to discover an Earth-like planet and maybe also potential to discover life. So I think this is a really exciting time in the exoplanetary field, including also the quite a new research direction called astrobiology. So this is a research direction trying to understand life, that it's life, how it could look like somewhere else on those other distant worlds. And I think this is an absolutely exciting research domain. And I'm sure in the upcoming years, there will be many exciting new projects in exoplanet domain. And I might be biased, but I think this is one of the most exciting domains in astrophysics in general, because, I mean, imagine for thousands of years, people wondering if there is life out there. And now our generation, we're starting to ask, if there is life out there, what would it look like? So personally, I think this is absolutely fascinating. And I would absolutely say that if young aspiring scientists are excited about those distant worlds as much as I am, then they should not be shy and absolutely try to join our field. There will be a lot of exciting discoveries coming in the next decades, I'm sure.
Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us. I have one last question for you. Reflecting on your journey, what advice would you give to young women and girls who dream of pursuing careers in STEM fields?
I think when I think about like difficulties for women in STEM domain, I think of two different types of barriers, so to say. So of course there is on one hand this external barrier. So for example, especially the older generation of scientists is unfortunately well known for being reluctant to hire women, because many of them grew up in the environment where women were considered to be less smart than men, and it's very hard for them to change this stereotype, and it's very difficult to actually solve this problem, because often it's not even like acknowledged as being a problem, that this stereotype is still very strong in the, especially like in the older generation of scientists. I think it's important also not to take everything too personally. I know it's easier said than done, but based on my experience, I feel like people who are happy and successful are usually very nice, very supportive people, and they would usually be very nice to the younger generations. People who are not behaving nicely, especially people who are not behaving nicely to younger people or to women, are usually just those who are trying to make themselves feel better somehow by making others feel worse. And I think this is something that you should remind yourself every now and then, that if somebody is not treating you in a nice way, it's not necessarily your fault. It's often not your fault, actually. So, and on the other hand, I often notice women tend to have internal barriers when they have too much of self-doubt, and they start to think like, maybe I'm actually not smart enough to join scientific field. I also understand it, because I'm also a person who is often affected by a lot of self-doubt, but this is something that depends on you rather than on other people. So I think this is, well, I don't have a solution for it. You need to learn to have more of a self-belief and trust that you as a person, you as a scientist, that you will be valuable addition to a research team, for example, because I think that all the best ideas actually come when different mindsets, different characters come together. And this is why diversity in general, including also gender diversity, is so important in science and everyone else as well, because it just makes everything so much more fascinating. Every person is so unique that something that you can bring into the project or something that you can bring to the team is absolutely unique as you are. So I think this is the beauty of it. And so as an advice, I would say you should not be afraid to join a team, knowing that you will be one of the few female scientists. Even if you'll be one and the only female scientist in the team, it can still be a great experience for you and for the research team as well.
Dr. Roshenko, thank you sincerely for sharing your valuable insights with us today. Your journey as a woman in STEM serves as a beacon of inspiration for future generations, while at the same time shedding light on the ongoing work being done to achieve greater inclusion in these fields.
Thank you so much. Thank you.